from the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
Religious freedom is heralded at the White House and on Washington, D.C.'s National Mall. That's coming up on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and homeschool dad. Today's guests represent two very significant events that occurred this past week. Wednesday was National Religious Freedom Day, and Friday was the annual March for Life in Washington, D.C. Let's begin with our first guest. He has a long history of being a pro-life advocate. A little more than a decade ago, he and I both attended the same church in Northern Virginia. But times change. Now I host the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, and he is the Vice President of the United States. Here's Tony Perkins and Vice President Mike Pence.
Mr. Vice President, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony Perkins, it is great to be back on Washington Watch, and thanks for bringing back some great memories. Actually, Karen and I, when our kids were very young, went to our first March for Life nearly 20 years ago, and you're so right. While most of the national media will ignore it, tomorrow on the National Mall, we'll have a throng of tens of thousands of people, especially young people, that are coming out to take a stand for life. And frankly, it was one of the most inspiring things I've ever been involved in, and particularly serving alongside President Trump, the most pro-life president in American history. We have much to celebrate, but we also have much work yet to do. But good to be with you.
Well, Mr. Vice President, you mentioned the president, Donald Trump, who his policies, the policies of this administration, have been a part of advancing that that culture of life. And as we, as I talked about this march to the restoration of the sanctity of life, we're making progress on that journey.
Well, we really are. And you know, your millions of listeners around the country in supporting this pro-life president and also supporting, you know, pro-life majorities in the House and Senate over the past 2 years, it's made it possible for us to make sure no foreign aid dollars go to any organization that supports or promotes abortion, the so-called Mexico City policy. I was able to cast the tie-breaking vote in the Senate to allow states to defund the largest abortion provider in America, in Planned Parenthood.
By the way, I think, Mr. Vice President, you were, yeah, I think, the first to carry that bill floor when you were in the House of Representatives.
Well, thanks for remembering. You know, as you know, I'm pro-life. I don't apologize for it. We've taken a strong stand for life throughout our public career, and we'll, and frankly, will to our dying day. But for me, a decade ago, I authored the first legislation to defund Planned Parenthood. And while we're not there yet, we are absolutely determined to continue to cut off all funding. The largest abortion provider in America should not be the largest recipient of federal funding under Title X. We've made progress along that way. States can now defund Planned Parenthood, but we're going to stay in the fight for life. And also, we're going to stay in the fight with, you know, you look at the men and women this president has been appointing to our federal courts at every level, principled conservatives who will interpret the Constitution as written, the legislative support that we've had, pro-life majorities in state houses around the country. I really believe in our lifetime, Tony, that we will see the sanctity of life restored to the center of American law. That's my hope. My prayer tomorrow on the National Mall will be calling for that and celebrating the progress we've made.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins, joined by Vice President Mike Pence as we're talking about the March for Life that takes place here in Washington, D.C. Tomorrow. You know, the culture is a big part of restoring this sanctity of human life, this understanding of that this is an inalienable right. And we're making progress. The polling shows that, especially among young people of all places, millennials, not in track with the Democratic Party. But as you point out, Mr. Vice President, the courts have played a huge role in this. 46 years ago, they thought they were going to solve this issue by imposing this on the nation. But the American people continue to push back.
Well, they do. And I have to tell you that I believe with all of my heart, not just for the electoral victories of pro-life candidates and this pro-life president, but also just from what I see around the country, life is winning in America. And life is winning more hearts and minds of young people in America every single day. And, you know, I remember speaking at the March for Life years ago, and I said, you know, when you look at the fact that more and more young people are choosing to embrace the sanctity of life, I'm convinced that it's been a result of a movement. It's been a result of people speaking out in the public square, the result of crisis pregnancy centers and their deeply compassionate yeah. work, you know, loving young women with, you know, who find themselves in a crisis pregnancy and loving their unborn child. But I also believe, and I've said this, that I also think that in the quiet councils between mothers and daughters and grandmothers and granddaughters, the truth about abortion is being told. And young people are hearing that truth. They're choosing life. And I believe that's why we're seeing the steady progress that we're making. That whatever the national media, and I'll be honest with you, Tony, you know, we know you'll be flipping around the channels tomorrow trying to find some coverage of the March for Life, and you won't find it on much of the mainstream press, but the fact that this movement is growing, support for the right to life is growing, is a testament to the heart and the compassion of the American people.
And I would add to that list of contributing factors is science. I mean, the science is proving what we've known, that from the moment of conception, that this is a life. It's created, it's unique, and it is worthy to be protected under our laws. And that's proving that. When you can see a snapshot of a baby in the womb, and which is oftentimes the first picture on a refrigerator, we're making progress in science.
Tony, we really are. And in fact, I'm speaking at what's called the Rose Banquet on Friday night, and it's actually the theme this year is pro-life and pro-science. And I'm going to talk about just that, about the fact that the steady advance of science, ultrasound technology, people are seeing that this arbitrary decision written by Justice Blackmun long ago, the anniversary of which we will mark with this March for Life in Roe versus Wade, has, you know, is not based in science. It's based in politics. But as science advances, as a greater understanding of the unborn advances, I think we'll see the cause of life advance as well.
Well, Mr. Vice President, I know we just got a couple more minutes with you because I know you've got a lot on your plate. You've been working with the president, his direction to try to resolve this current impasse over national security and government funding. Do we see a resolution in sight?
Well, you know, the president has been providing leadership on the issue of illegal immigration since the campaign. I mean, this was an issue that he literally put back at the center of the national debate. As I sit here today, 2 years into this administration, we are literally facing, because Congress has not been willing to act, we're literally facing a security and humanitarian crisis on our southern border. I had a piece in USA Today yesterday that you might want to share with your listeners, a link. People can find it easily online. 2,000 illegal immigrants attempt to come into our country every single day. We see this new caravan that has started heading north. Literally, we have a caravan attempt to cross our border illegally every day, and the largest percentage of them ever are now families and unaccompanied minors who are being exploited by human traffickers mm-hmm. and the cartels yeah. who have them take the long and dangerous journey north. They're often exploited not only physically but financially. They have to give thousands of dollars of cash to make this journey to come into our country illegally. Add to that narcotics. President Trump is absolutely determined. We're going to stand firm until we get the funding to build a wall on the southern border where it's needed, and to support additional border personnel, additional technology. And all that's missing right now is the Democrats. I mean, your listeners deserve to know the president is standing. He and I have been, we canceled all of our Christmas vacation plans. We've been here for the last month every single day, and the Democrats refuse to negotiate until we reopen the government. And the president's just made it clear. He's going to stand firm for border security. We want to end this partial government shutdown. The president signed a bill yesterday making sure that all federal employees will get 100% of their back pay. We have great compassion for federal employees that are impacted and their families. But we also have great compassion for 320 million Americans that are facing a crisis of illegal immigration. And we're going to stand firm. People are being, not only the American people are losing without secure borders, but frankly, vulnerable families south of our border are being exploited by human traffickers. President Trump and I are determined to bring this to a resolution, solve the crisis, reopen the government, and make real progress for our country.
Well, and I think, I know for our listeners, they applaud the president's resolve on this issue of solving this humanitarian crisis on the border. Mr. Vice President, I know we got to go here, but your wife and our teacher has been the target of critics this week, along with the Christian school where she's teaching part-time, because that school believes the Bible. I mean, are you concerned about this effort to marginalize people of faith that's going on in our culture right now?
Well, you and I have known each other a long time. And, Karen and I have been in and around public life for almost two decades. And so, to be honest with you, we're used to the criticism. But the attacks on Christian education by the mainstream media have got to stop. We cherish the freedom of religion in this country. This administration stands foursquare for the freedom of religion of people of all faiths. And to see the mainstream media criticize my wife because she's choosing to return to the classroom of an elementary Christian school is wrong. Again, the attacks on Christian education must end.
Mr. Vice President, thank you so much for joining us. And as always, please convey our appreciation to the president for the resolution that you have shown in standing for that religious freedom. We're grateful for it.
Thank you, Tony. Great to be with you.
You can find out more about Vice President Pence, along with the link to his article in USA Today and a petition in support of Second Lady Karen Pence when you head over to TonyPerkins.com. While you're there, why don't you consider helping Family Research Council get this year off on the right foot financially by simply clicking on the donate button. Your help can make all the difference. That website, once more, is TonyPerkins.com.
The world on our horizon isn't like the days I knew. Gone are the days of writing with fresh ink on thick paper and the swift crack of a letter opener, replaced by fancy robots trying to figure out how often I buy organic goji berries. Thankfully, there's a silver lining to all this newfangled technology. Family Research Council's Stand Firm app. Contact your legislators directly from your smartphone or tablet and share legislative alerts with your contacts and connect with like-minded Christians about the latest current events. Keep your cool and help secure our future at frc.org/app.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. As I mentioned earlier in the show, Wednesday was National Religious Freedom Day, which was accompanied by a White House proclamation. And our next guest is a leading thinker on the issue of religious freedom. Born in China to medical missionaries, great-great-great-grandson of a Dublin, Ireland brewer, and a prolific author, Dr. Oz Guinness joined Tony to talk about his latest book, Last Call for Liberty, How America's Genius for Freedom Has Become Its Greatest Threat. Here's Tony Perkins.
Let's start, Oz, with you were born in China. We were just talking about China, the growing repression there of religious minorities, Christians in particular. How important is what is happening in China to American Christians here?
Incredibly important, because China's increasingly a grand rival. But it's happening at the same time as we're moving from what's called a post-truth world to what's increasingly a post-rights world, and that's very deadly. In other words, since World War II, it's been taken for granted, human rights, the Universal Declaration, this is the Bible of the secular world, that sort of stuff. Now it's dismissed. It's Western-centric. It hasn't got a foundation. Or it's a new book, The Last Gasp of Utopianism. So we're moving to a post-rights world. But we who are Christians and followers of Jesus, we have the deepest grounding. Humans made in the image of God. That's why it's inalienable.
Right.
Doesn't you can't move. Ground it in many of the secular views. So what's happening in China, both their power, but also a grand secular and a communist state, incredibly important for the human future.
But in part being fueled by America's view of this fundamental freedom.
Since RFRA, and I was involved earlier in the Williamsburg Charter, there's been a sea change. So after 300 years, what's happening in many elite circles is unrecognizable in the light of American history. And I call it the four dark R's, the reducers, those who reduce religious freedom to freedom of worship.
Right.
The removers, strict separation of state, not freedom for religion, but freedom from religion. Now, you've always had a little of that increasing rapidly. Then the really serious one, the rebranders. So religious freedom along with civil and religious liberty, the first freedom, as you often said in the program. Today, a code word for bigotry, hatred, discrimination. In other words, they've turned it upside down.
Right.
And then you have what I call the reimaginers, John Lennon, George Soros style, people who live at 30,000 feet in their private jets and from penthouse. You know, imagine there's no religion. Imagine there's no borders. Imagine there's no countries. And these people live at that elite level. They don't understand what makes human beings tick. And so America now has huge parts of the intelligentsia who are night and day's difference from 300 years of America.
I mean, this is a real battle. And it in your latest book, which I find fascinating, basically the juxtaposing the values that came from the French Revolution to the values that drove the America's war for independence. Those are in sharp contrast, but yet there's some appealing to those values of the French Revolution.
No, absolutely. And, you know, 50 years ago last year, there was a call for a long march through the institutions.
Right.
That was cultural Marxism. And you look at the universities and colleges, the press and the media, and the world of entertainment, especially Hollywood, they have won most of those spheres where the ideas are fought. And that's incredibly dangerous because they really owe everything, not to the American Revolution, but to the heirs of the French Revolution. So, you know, in Paul's letter to Galatians, he says, who's bewitched you? This is another gospel. But what's happening in America today is another revolution, the wrong one. And the trouble is, unlike the 1850s, another time of deep division, there is no Lincoln-like leader speaking on behalf of the better angels. And that was the genius of Lincoln. He believed in the Declaration. He articulated that over against slavery, etc., etc. Today, make America great again, the military, yes, the economy, yes, but the idea, this is a country by intention and by ideas.
So,
and
so it's really
got to speak for them.
It's a revival for those ideas that really birthed America.
Absolutely.
Which religious freedom is central to.
But we've got to have someone at the leadership level to say it. You've got to restore it in civic education, in the public schools, and you've got to have back in the families of America, too.
Oz, I want to throw something out here because we were just talking about the immense persecution. I've heard the testimony now as I've been working internationally on the commission of what's happening. And oftentimes we hear as a response, especially from the church in America, is that, well, you know, the church grows under persecution. When we lose our freedoms, we find the church grows. I find that while there may be truth in that, that is not an excuse to allow this fundamental God-given right to be lost.
No, I agree with you, absolutely. But we need, as Christians, to go back to many of the great founding ideas. And even alongside religious freedom is the notion of freedom. In other words, you've got two very different views of freedom. Now, these things should be taught in our churches because, take, say, freedom and human dignity. They come from the Old Testament. Genesis is the Magna Carta of humanity, that humans are made in the image and likeness of God.
Right.
That's where it comes from. So the churches should be teaching the foundations, and that's where so much of this is missing. The same is true of freedom. You cannot find freedom through secularists, the new atheists and so on. You simply can't, any more than the Greeks who believed in fate, or the Babylonians and the stars and so on. Freedom is almost unique to the Bible. And Christians should realize we're the heirs, the defenders, the champions of these magnificent truths. They've got to start with the church.
And we shouldn't be apologetic for those views, because everyone benefits from those views. When we pursue freedom and freedom prospers, everyone, whether or not they subscribe to a religious view or the origins of those freedoms, they benefit.
There are about 10 or 12 foundational truths you cannot find anywhere else except in the Bible. And we believe in the gospel, the good news. This is still the best news ever. And we've got to get Christians off the back foot so defensively, with gratitude and with confidence moving out, because we have in the scriptures and in the good news of Jesus, we've got the key to so many of these crises.
You know, Oz Guinness is one who was not born in this country. You've been here, though, since, I think, 1984. Born in China, as we've talked about a few moments ago, you've seen the world. You see what is unfolding. What do you see the connection between Americans understanding, and I'm talking about Christians here in America, understanding the importance of this freedom, and not being reduced to the freedom of worship, but to the freedom of religion, the ability to live your life according to your biblical faith. How important is that to what happens overseas in other countries to other believers?
Mm-hmm. Tony, put it this way. Free societies are very rare, and societies that are diverse and have got religious freedom right are rarer still. So America is the longest running tutorial in the art of political freedom. And if in this present generation America squanders this heritage, it's of historic importance, not just for Americans, because we're near the tipping point. It's historic importance for the entire world. Look at the chaos in my own country, Britain, Brexit currently, the chaos in Europe at large, and the things we've been hearing about the Middle East or China, or we haven't gone, say, Africa, Nigeria, and so on, Boko Haram. If America goes down the drain willfully, it's tragic. And you think of what Lincoln said, as a nation of free men, either we will be free for all time or die by suicide. And much of America, through its bad choices and the dark consequences, is intent on committing national suicide in terms of freedom. For me as a foreigner, it's tragic.
Well, Oz, let's deconstruct that for a moment. Let's take that apart, dissect it, and walk that back so that our listeners who are listening across this country, many of whom have read your books, what do they do? How do you take that, what we now see as having international implications for the whole world, mm-hmm. how we view religious freedom and we pursue that freedom here so that others will benefit from the byproducts of it, what do we do as individuals?
Well, even the three things that have come up repeatedly in the hour, you know, first, leadership. We need to pray for a Lincoln-like leader to articulate these things. Secondly, the restoration of civic education. You can't have the unum to balance the pluribus, a pluribus unum, unless the public schools teach what it is to be citizens again.
Right.
But then you've also referred to the deepest thing that touches all of us, the church. The scandal of the American church, this is the one country in the West where Christians are a huge majority, but non-influential. And tiny, wonderful groups like the Jewish people, or groups we disagree with, like LGBT activists. 2% of America, 3% of America. But they have more cultural influence than the huge majority of us who are Christians. We are not as salty and light-bearing as we should be. And we need to ask for restoration, revival, and renewal in the churches that we might make a difference.
It begins with that prayer, praying for our nation, for those leaders, for the persecuted church around the world, but also, as you said, that we might be the messengers of that truth, and in such a way that we engage the culture, not thinking that the culture is the source of our salvation. It is not, But it is where we live, and it is what we've been given. It is it's where we are, and it's where what we are to influence.
In a free democratic republic, we're responsible citizens. You may know someone quoted, "Government of the people, by the people, for the people." That isn't original to Lincoln. Do you know where that originally came from? Was John Wycliffe in the 14th century, who said, when the Bible is restored to ordinary people, they will be capable of government of the people, by the people. Lincoln was quoting. And actually, biblical foundations are critical to so many of these crises today.
Well, William Penn, the founder of Pennsylvania, made reference to government being like clocks, taking its motion from men. And if we want godly government, which we all say we do, you don't get it unless you have godly people in government. And so we have to be willing to engage and be involved in our government. Talk for just a moment. We've got a few minutes left before we run out of time. When you look at these principles of the left, which we made reference to a moment ago with the French Revolution and the idea that was really antithetical to religious freedom. I mean, they despised religious freedom. They attacked the church. Is that not what we see in many ways today coming from the left?
Oh, absolutely. If you take political correctness, or take the new views of religious freedom, or take the sexual revolution as a whole, it goes back through Wilhelm Reich to the Marquis de Sade and Jean-Jacques Rousseau. All those ideas come from 1789, and it says, like Nietzsche, not to the American Revolution. So just as Elijah said, if you want to follow Baal, follow Baal. If you want to follow the Lord, follow the Lord. We need a Lincoln. You remember, the first duty of a leader is to define reality. In other words, we need a Lincoln-like leader who will say, this is where we are. This is the State of the Union. To make America great again, we've got to look at the ideas that made America great in the first place. To set them out and make people choose, like Elijah did on Mount Carmel. America's got to choose. One way is a homecoming. The other way is national suicide in terms of a free republic.
Oz Guinness, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Great to have you on the program.
Thank you.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkel, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.